Mm-hmm. Hogan. Mm-hmm. He's Whitehorse businessman and very much involved in the economic activity of the Yukon. We've heard this phrase, gloom and doom, applying to our economy right now. What's the reason for it? Do things not look particularly good right now for the economy?
I think that if people probably have a month or two of a slowdown, it's doom and gloom. There's no doom and gloom. There's no need to have doom and gloom with the Yukon and an outlook on a long-range basis. Mm-hmm. We do have some current problems. I don't think we're currently, we're certainly not in an expansionist period. We've leveled, if not slipped back slightly. Certainly the next 2 years are not good from the Yukon economy as I see it. Mm-hmm. I say that, and then I'll qualify it later because there are some things on the horizon that could change that situation within weeks or months. But basically, no, there is a problem now because various programs have been underway or slowing down or phasing out, and there's really no new programs developing. There's a real concern that perhaps we'd like to say that we'll do it ourselves because we are the Yukon and we'd like to do it ourselves, but the fact remains that Northern Affairs are the ones responsible for certain economic development. And I personally am concerned that within the department, unless it's a social matter or a matter of Indian Affairs or a matter of the environment, that the economic development of the Yukon is now getting very, very little attention.
What can the businessmen of the Yukon do about it? Anything? Is the government being responsive to the business community here?
I think there's a good relationship between the business community and government. I don't see any problems there. I think we as citizens have perhaps not done enough in making our views known, making proposals, presentations to the minister, to others in Northern Affairs and local government. We should be more active. We have not been, and I think that perhaps as happens, we become a bit complacent. Things are going along at a good pace, and we're not looking far enough ahead.
Well, are there other issues? You mentioned the environment. Of course, there's land claims right now, pipeline. They're getting so much attention that the actual economic condition of the and the outlook and the possibilities are really not receiving enough attention right now across the board. Could that be a part of the problem?
Well, the pipeline is something, in a sense, beyond our control. I don't think the Yukon grabbed on to the possibility of an Alaska Highway pipeline and promoted it or worked on it. And I'm saying this not knowing, there's a viewpoint that we shouldn't have it, a viewpoint that we should have it.
Haven't we jumped on the bandwagon, though, since...
We've jumped on the bandwagon somewhat, but we didn't initiate it. No. We're not doing enough within the Yukon itself to make things happen, I believe.
Well, how do you change that?
I think it's being it's happening now. I think there is there are groups working, and I think that we will be doing more through the Chamber of Commerce with a full-time manager. There's another group, the Yukon Research and Development Institute, is very active. Had a meeting planned, as a matter of fact, with the minister for an hour to talk about mainly rail extension mm-hmm. and hydro development, which didn't happen, of course, and but. No, I think there's a momentum building, that there will be a continued involvement of people here from a development standpoint.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the things that we've heard about that are certainly would have an effect upon our economy, and rail extension is one of them. We've heard the possibility of extension of railroads from Alaska into the Yukon or coming right up through northern BC, at least right to our border. Just what is the outlook for rail extension?
The rail to Alaska, I think, is a pipe dream. It's not going to happen today. It's not going to happen in the foreseeable future. I'd like to see it naturally, but I don't think it will. Mm-hmm. A rail extension northward is at a standstill beyond Dease, and I don't think that will happen for some time. But a very real need and a very real possibility is rail extension beyond Whitehorse, the White Pass Railroad, mm-hmm. onto the vicinity of Little Salmon and into the Ross River area. That is an absolutely essential, positively essential extension that must happen and must be worked on, and that is the area in which, let's go back to the Carr report of 66, 68. Mm-hmm. It was released in 68, and we were very much involved in initiating the Carr report, and one of the projections made was that mineral production would develop at a certain rate. I think I brought some figures along here. At the time of the report, there were 20,000 tons of mineral products being shipped out of the Yukon. He projected by 1975, 460,000 tons would be shipped. We have achieved this, but one of the significant recommendations of that report was in order to achieve growth beyond that level, there must be built certain of the infrastructure necessary. Government must continue to invest in facilities such as transportation and hydroelectric development in order to allow the private sector to develop. The infrastructure recommended was rail extension, more road building, and no hesitation saying the government has just done a first-class job in road building.
Mm-hmm.
But rail extension is the next essential thing, as is hydro. This, unfortunately, is not happening. Studies have been completed, detailed studies, environmental studies, everything is set, but it's at an absolute standstill. And he said that, and there's been a good deal of credibility given to Carr report, because future studies have again reemphasized these statements that the infrastructure must be built. The rail is at a standstill, nothing is doing, nothing is happening, no negotiations are going on. And this is where we have to put our emphasis right now in planning for the next stage. We're already late.
There seems to be a problem, as I see it, with the federal government. Now, Judd Buchanan was up here. He made six major changes in his schedule and left quite early, and that created some problems on its own. Dennis Singer managed to nab him at the airport and really didn't have much time to prepare questions. As an example, he asked him about the license application for the fourth turbine wheel at White Horse Rapids Dam. Buchanan says he doesn't know where it is. It's not on his desk. He doesn't know where it is. But it hasn't come back here despite pressure from the water board here. They wanted it back, and they've gone ahead and given a copy to NCPC anyway, so NCPC could know what was going on. How do you combat that kind of thing in government where there just isn't the responsiveness there ought to be?
Well, I'm not sure of the size of the building that houses Northern Affairs people in Ottawa, but it's pretty big, and there's many levels, and the communication of that nature would go in at one point, and how rapidly it climbs to the minister's level, I just don't know. How do you combat it? I would suggest that someone pick up the phone to the minister's office from time to time and say, where is this report? It's urgent. We've got to get on with this development, or it'll be too late.
Well, Bert Boyd said they've been doing this. They've been contacting Ottawa, and they keep getting put off. And yet this is a very vital thing for the North, because this is going to greatly increase the capacity of this plant here. And yet they can't seem to get any satisfaction in it.
Well, I guess we can go back to what all of us want to achieve, and that is more responsibility within the Yukon so we don't have the communication problem. How to solve it at the moment, I don't know.
Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about any studies which might be going on right now and about some of the employers in the Yukon and how it's affecting our economy. If you've got a question in this regard, my guest is businessman Rolf Hogan. We're talking about the economic status condition of the Yukon right now. Give us a call at 667-7891, 7892, or 7893.
It's 20 minutes before noon hour at CKRW. Now, Yukon Tire at 107 Industrial Road has an added service. Propane gas sales are now available. Drop into Yukon Tire for all your vehicle's requirements, now including the new service of propane gas sales. Yukon Tire opens 7:30 in the morning to 9 in the evening weekdays, and 8 in the morning till 8 in the evening Sundays and holidays.
Something new has happened to something old in Haines Junction, the Kluane Park Inn. Built in 1946 by Sally Olson's father, John Backey, and officially opened by Cal Miller and Bob Swanson, has been completely remodeled and in some areas rebuilt. The Kluane Park Inn, with the beautiful Kluane range for a front yard, now boasts 18 hotel rooms, two suites facing the park, cocktail lounge, games room, and dance floor. The grand opening is this Sunday, June 27th. Neil and Sally Olson are looking forward to seeing all of their old friends. The Canucks will be providing the music. By the way, Cal Miller and Bob Swanson will be there for the opening, but don't let that stop you.
Those rumbles, bunks, and pings have got to go. Restore your car's driving performance with a tune-up at Taylor Chevrolet. With a car tune-up, it means more car miles for your dollar. Taylor Chevrolet's factory-trained technicians will tune up your car in top running condition, ready for the open road. Taylor Chevrolet offers reliable parts and labor. Putting you first keeps them first at Taylor Chevrolet, 2nd and Lambert.
I was looking through Fortune magazine's list of the 500 largest industrial corporations, and we have one of them represented in the Yukon. I think Anvil Mining Corporation ranked 430th in that list of 500 largest. And
that would be the Cypress Corporation.
Yeah, it's the parent corporation, and right now their current issue is listing the next 500 corporations. I haven't had a chance to go through that yet. But is our economy in the Yukon fairly dependent upon three or four large industries and corporations? For example, the government, of course, and White Pass, Cypress Anvil. Do you think that's good for an area to have that kind of economic base?
No, it's very, very dangerous. We're in a situation where our base is extremely narrow. It's based outside of tourism, which is important, and government activities, which contribute many dollars to the area. But these things are generally all based. Government activities are based on the mineral industry.
Mm-hmm.
And we have, four or five operating mines, plus the gold in Dawson and so on. And any one of those that might close or be shut down for a period of time has a very, very serious economic effect on the business sector, which then spreads down into the employees of those organizations, and it has an effect on government revenues. And again, it has a major effect on White Pass, because White Pass's transportation is principally based on the mining industry, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have a very, very narrow base, and we should be striving to make it possible to broaden the base or to have more operating mines, so the base, even though it's still based on minerals, which I think is our only, pretty well our only long-range hope, so that if there is a disruption by one mine, it hasn't got too great an impact. And the closure of the Clinton Cassiar mine out of Dawson is going to have a serious impact on the Yukon, and that's only less than 2 years away when it will close. And the other mine, United Kino, has had a questionable future for some years. It's certainly still going, and we hope it's going to be there for some time, but it's not a highly successful mine, although it's been running a long time. Its reserves are always just a very short time ahead. And of course, Whiter's Copper had a substantial loss last year, and so it's a very marginal situation where, of course, the effect on Whitehorse itself would be devastating if it should have to close for economic reasons.
Is the Chamber of Commerce satisfied, the Chamber of Mines satisfied with the exploration going on right now in the Yukon, or would you like to see a lot more in terms of mineral exploration?
Well, I don't know that much about the Chamber of Mines their viewpoint, but I did talk to Cam Ogilvy recently, and the level of exploration is still good this year, but it's down slightly from last year.
How has the change in government in British Columbia affected the mining industry here?
I don't really know. There's speculation only that there will be more money spent in BC, which could perhaps result in less spent in the Yukon. But when you look at the Yukon situation, there's been a lot of dollars spent over the last few years,
mm-hmm.
but no new mines. We haven't had a new mine since 69. And that can be discouraging. And we might say, why haven't we had new mines? And again, I go back to the infrastructure, rail extension, and lower cost transportation. And that is why this rail must go, because there are properties, there's the Minto properties south, it's downriver,
right.
So you think of south, it's north of Carmacks, which is a copper property. It's had a feasibility study pretty well completed. It's still going on drilling for foundation for mill. There's no announcement whether it would go ahead. You know, a few years ago, 1% copper would be a mine. Now 2% copper with high costs of operation is becoming questionable.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an interesting point, because every time you add costs to a mine, a lot of the ore becomes waste rock.
That's right.
If it's a tax increase or higher costs of goods and services or higher cost of labor, all of this makes a mine that can be operated one day, perhaps not economic the next. And I know the feasibility study is constantly being updated on the Minto property. And there's perhaps the most exciting one at the moment is the Grum AEX property in the Faro region. The town of Faro would itself be the base of the mine,
mm-hmm.
the residential base of the mine. That is a lead zinc property, and it is not going to reach a point of decision, I believe, until 77 now. They're mm-hmm. still doing work. It's very, very promising, but they're working on metallurgical problems and design and so on. Up the Cano Road, there's the Placer, Canex Placer property, which is a very large tonnage of zinc. It is a proven ore body. There's the Hudson Bay property at the McMillan Pass, lead, zinc, and silver. And the economics of that, the feasibility study would indicate, from what I'm told, that the economics of it would indicate a mine, and they're working on metallurgical problems, or metallurgical testing to determine how best they could go ahead. Then there's the Amex Tungsten, which is the world's largest deposit of tungsten, I believe, and it is located somewhere between Canton and McMillan Pass. McMillan Pass is on the Cano Road at the Yukon NWT border. These are all exciting properties, but transportation
have to be able to get it out of there.
Not adequate.
You have to be able to get it out of there. So how do you convince the government that they've got to make the expenditure to put the roads in? Now, we've got a couple of roads which have been in the news here lately. Of course, the Carcross-Skagway, the completion of that that road, but that again is supposed to be just a seasonal road, a summer road.
And that has more of a social impact.
Yeah,
than
social,
a,
but what about the Dempster
economic.
Highway? The Yukon Conservation Society did a seminar on the Dempster Highway not too long ago, and what seemed to be coming out of that was why? Why is that highway up there when... The effort, the money that was put into that highway could have gone into one of these other areas you've mentioned where there would be a great economic return from the building of the road.
I think the Dempster Highway is a great highway, an essential highway, and if you lived in the Mackenzie Delta, I think you would probably have no question.
You'd agree with it.
Disagree.
Uh-huh.
It's serving a growing area of northern Yukon, and that's NWT
mm-hmm.
and Yukon. And it is going to open that entire region to the Yukon from an economic standpoint. Whitehorse, Vancouver will perhaps be part of the supply center rather than Edmonton on a very short season down the Mackenzie. There will be benefits from tourism, and I have no question but that road is one of our great highways that will benefit the north substantially.
All these deposits, these ore deposits, different ore deposits you've mentioned, is there the possibility that perhaps the Chamber of Commerce with the Chamber of Mines and some private companies may begin to focus in on one area and try and work with the government to get transportation created for one particular area? Is there any one area that looks good right now for development?
I think that region is probably the most promising, all that is served by this rail,
mm-hmm.
Either... not all of it served totally, but it
mm-hmm.
would lower the cost of transportation, and that is the number one priority.
Mm-hmm.
The second one being hydro development that must go almost hand in hand, and that would have to come in order for any large developments of mine. But these are real properties that have large ore bodies that are actively being worked on presently,
mm-hmm.
and I think the outlook in the mining industry for the Yukon, with some clouds, I think the outlook is very good. And the clouds I speak of is high costs could make what has been a good property questionable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to take a break, and we're going to have about 8 minutes left when we come back to talk about these, to talk about any other industry which may be feasible for the Yukon. If you've got questions in regard to this or comments you'd like to make to Mr. Rolf Hogan, give us a call at 778-91-7892 or 7893.
It's 9 minutes before noon hour at CKRW, 19 Celsius in the capital city, rise of 3 since the last hour. Here's a note for all travelers. The Greyhound Bus Depot has daily bus routes to all destinations south, leaving at 9:30 daily, except Sunday. And a north bus route runs alternate days, leaving at 8:45. Each one of these times are in the morning. Even days for the month of June and July, and odd alternate days for the month of August. And northbound buses run to Fairbanks straight through. For further information on bus schedules, dial the Greyhound Bus Depot at 7-222-3. 7-222-3.
Howdy, stranger, and you look right tuckered.
Man, I've been on the road for 4 days now. It sure is nice to drop into this friendly Copper King Tavern and set a spell here and quench my thirst, eat some of that delicious flavor crisp chicken, and play around with all them games. And I hear they even got a live disco Wednesday through Saturday evenings. Boy, it sure is nice to relax here after that trip.
Hey, where are you from, fella?
I'm from Watson Lake. The Copper King Tavern at mile 918 on the Alaska Highway.
We've always known just what to do for as long as we've been friends. Good laughs, well, we've had a few since good days never end. Two things that just never change are my friends and my beer. Traditions never change, good friendship and good beer.
Good friendship and good beer. Old style beer, slow brewed and naturally aged.
These two traditions never change, good friendship and good beer.
Talking with Rolf Hogan about the economic status and future of the Yukon. Now, one other thing I wanted to ask you about, we talked about mining and about transportation. Are there other industries for which it would be feasible for them to come into the Yukon, or say Whitehorse, to establish something here? Can you think of other industries?
I don't think there are that many. There's certain forest activities that is now going on and perhaps can be expanded and also into the pulp and paper. This is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think in relation to the tourist industry, there's a possibility of extending the season forward and backward, as mm-hmm. well as expanding the sourdough rendezvous as a building towards a greater tourist industry in wintertime. And the north and the cold has an attraction for a tourist industry. And a ski resort.
Mm-hmm.
Many ski resorts in the south have 6 weeks of skiing because of climatic conditions. We have the Montana Mountain out of Carcross. Mm-hmm. You can ski in June. I think there's a real possibility of a ski resort in the Yukon.
Let's take this call. Good morning, talk back.
Yeah, do you know, Mr. Hogan, if the Canal Road is going to be resurfaced or widened?
From my knowledge of it, the Canal Road from Johnson's Crossing to Ross River is not going to have further work done on it. It's had extensive work done over the past few years. And the North Canal, I'm not aware of any program to do anything major at this point. I believe the government, there was a roads committee through here about a year ago, and I received a copy of that report, and the upgrading of the North Canal is certainly on a priority basis, and several other roads are recommended, one from Cantung to McMillan Pass, so you have a circle route, and then eventually from McMillan Pass over to the Mayo ELSA region.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for calling. So there's a possibility of tourism going. I think we suggested this to people from the Yukon Visitors Association on this program, the possibility of travel agencies promoting northern packages during the winter. You know, why go to Palm Springs and do that kind of thing, which everybody does, when you could come north and ice fish and ski, and we'll just reverse the psychology a little bit.
Yeah, I think the Yukon Sourdough Rendezvous can be sort of the start of a winter tourism.
Mm-hmm. And as you say, work into alpine skiing as well, not
mm-hmm.
just cross-country skiing,
right.
Which would do a lot for Carcross.
Well, that might not be the ideal site, but I illustrate that as
it's still
the
close to
ski
it.
Team was up there in mm-hmm. June practicing.
Mm-hmm. And it's close enough to Whitehorse. It's close enough to a transportation hub.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
What about Whitehorse itself? Are you happy with the way it's growing? We seem to see new buildings going up, housing's at a premium, so there's a lot of housing construction going on. Are you happy? Is the Chamber of Commerce happy with the way it's going right now?
I don't know about the Chamber of Commerce because I'm not a spokesman for the Chamber, but my personal observations, I believe there are 600 housing units built last year and are in the process of being built this year in
mm-hmm.
that season, which is quite fantastic. And we reached the first time in many years, perhaps in 7 or 8 years, where housing has finally caught up. Whether everyone can afford the housing is another question, but housing, there's actually a bit of a surplus developed at the moment
mm-hmm.
In housing.
Do you think that we're getting a high enough profile outside in terms of attracting people? Because solutioned with, for example, the employment situation and a while back the housing situation. Have they done too good a job, or are we not doing enough? Because there are many things nationally which the Yukon and the NWT seem to be left out of, or at least we get the impression that Yellowknife is the north as far as the federal government is
Look
concerned.
Look, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of jobs going begging in the Yukon.
Yeah.
You cannot get the skilled help you need. There may be quite a number unemployed and unable to get jobs, but when you speak of skilled jobs with expertise in certain fields, there is a serious shortage. in the Yukon. There has been for some time. There is today.
Do we have to get Yukoners who are resident here to be doing more promotion of this? I'll take myself as an example. I've lived here just over a year now, and I love the place. And when I go outside, I do a lot of talking about it, a lot of promoting of it to a lot of friends who I would say are highly trained people in many different areas, actually suggesting that they move up here because of the lifestyle here. Think we need to do more of that? Could it have a good effect on our business?
I think we should let people know what the Yukon has to offer, because it is a great place to live. But on the other hand, when you speak of that, you need jobs for them. Mm-hmm. And then you get into the issue of, do you want to develop the Yukon or do you not? I'm a pro-development person, not only because I'm in business, and everyone in business, I suppose, are pro-development, but there are certain things we want in this community and certain things we want in the Yukon. There's only one source of funds, and that is tax dollars. People who are employed, who pay taxes, businesses who are established and pay taxes, that's the only source of funds. And when we want a new cultural recreational complex, if we had an industry here of some type that employed 1,000 people, or another White Horse Copper that employed 200, we're closer to the day of being able to afford these things. We're being able to afford more paving and sidewalks and the facilities that make the community a better place to live. Mm-hmm. I'm totally pro-development. The only reservation is that certainly it must be planned with the environment in mind and the protection of the environment. And these can be done. I cite an instance of Kaiser Aluminum having come into the Yukon, and they said, we are looking at 5 sites in the world to put in an aluminum smelter. It seems strange they would even look at the Yukon 100 miles from the coast, but apparently this didn't bother them. I know something of this because I phoned, after hearing the gentleman was here, I phoned the vice president of Kaiser Aluminum in either Los Angeles, San Francisco, and talked to him. The fact is that we should have, with great enthusiasm, encouraged them to, at this stage, to seriously consider the Yukon. We should have been out there knocking on their door to say, look it, have a good look. Then, having got their attention, naturally we'd want the mill, if there was one built, we'd want to know about its pollution, we'd want to know about its effect on the environment, and so on. But that proposal, if it were to be established in Whitehorse, would employ 1,200 people. To me, that can only be good for the Yukon to get more people. Mm-hmm. Because of the things I just said about taxes and being able to afford things, it also brings us closer to the stage of political development with a larger population.
Provincial
base
status,
and so on.
where we can have some kind of support. This is this matter of employment. We hear every year that we have this great influx of people coming, particularly students wanting to work here. And people, they can't find jobs, and yet I've had people come to me, and I found out that if you hunt a little bit, there is work here. But you got to be willing to, you can't sit around and wait for it to come to you. You've got to get out and look for it.
Maybe, well, I think those who are aggressive probably are the ones who get the jobs first, but I think there is a genuine unemployment in the unskilled sector, but there certainly is an unemployment in many areas of skills. There's a shortage.
As you say, a lot of jobs are waiting for people to come and take them. You mentioned another ore development, Crest, which is not in the same area as these other ones.
Well, I guess we tend to forget about Crest, which was the big thing of about 10 or 15 years ago. But the Crest iron ore deposit is something like a billion tons of iron ore sitting north of Mayo. Mm-hmm. And it's a proven ore body, not necessarily high grade, but competitive prices of the world and high cost transportation, high cost operation, no source of cheap fuel, these are all reasons why at the moment it's still sitting as a great ore body. When that becomes viable, I don't really know. But we shouldn't forget about it, because it really sits there, and someday it'll be just a fantastic development in the north.
We're still dependent to a great extent, particularly in the mining industry, on world markets, fluctuations there. And I heard today warnings being given to corporations in the United States that they're making good recovery from recession, but they have to watch it, that they don't end up in another inflationary period, that the recovery could get carried away. And here in Canada, we kind of sit thinking that we're going to follow along with the United States. They'll take the lead in bringing down their inflation rate, and we'll go likewise, although we have some politicians and economists who don't necessarily agree with this concept. But aren't we quite dependent upon world markets?
We're very dependent on world markets. That's why alarms me at times when those who have the power, the authority to hold the line on costs or otherwise, and as an illustration, when we tax a mine, that adds the cost of the production of that mine. And certainly we must get some revenues from mines, but we have to be very careful at each stage that we don't, I suppose using the old phrase, kill the goose that laid the golden egg. And this is a very real possibility in the mining industry. And we just have to constantly be aware of this at all stages of development of the mining industry. Because if, on the national basis of our economy now, there are firms, not in the mining industry necessarily, although exploration dollars are being stepped up by Canadian companies abroad and in the U.S. because of the Canadian situation, but there are factories moving back to the U.S. Jobs are being lost at the rate, the last figure I heard was 100 jobs a week are being lost to the U.S. of plants closing or shifting production from Canada to the U.S. because we have now, from a country of being lower cost of production, we have now become a country of higher cost of production. And these are very real concerns that I think all Canadians must be concerned about.
And it's something, as you say, which is going to have a big effect on the Yukon. We're going to take one more break right now and then come back and kind of wrap this up talking about the economy. And if you've got any questions or comments you would like to make in the next few minutes, call us at 778-91-7892 or 7893.
It's 3 minutes after noon hour at CKRW. Georgetown Dry Cleaning Center has three different types of cleaning services. The very best in custom care service, where your individual garments are given a clean and press with attention to fine detail. Then there's easy care service, where your garments are cleaned and given a steam air finish. Or there's clean-only service by the piece or by the pound. Georgetown can do alterations and repairs like cuff and zipper replacement right in their premises. And remember, ties are cleaned free with every order. Georgetown, open till 10 in the evening, 7 days a week at 4213 4th Avenue.
Good evening. This is Earl Cameron for the Toyota National. First, the headlines. Toyota introduces a new version of the world's number one selling car model, the new Toyota Corolla Liftback. And now for the details to our reporters on the scene.
This is Peggy Standish.
And this is Dave Thomas reporting from the interior of a Toyota Corolla Liftback. Well, Peggy, I see you're folding down one of the back seats and climbing into the back.
Just one moment. I'm going to fold down the other half of the seat. One more.
They all fold down. It's amazing.
Yes.
The rear of the car appears like a small bowling alley. In fact, I believe if I was just a little shorter, I'd be able to run around in the back there and keep in shape.
Yes.
Earl, back to you.
And that's the way the new Corolla Liftback is. Split fold-down rear seat, lots of cargo space, all the standard Toyota features, and Toyota economy and toughness.
Hey, hey, Earl Cameron says hey.
And that's the way it is. Terrific.
Something new has happened to something old in Haines Junction, the Kluwani Park Inn. Built in 1946 by Sally Olson's father, John Backey, and officially opened by Cal Miller and Bob Swanson, has been completely remodeled and in some areas rebuilt. The Kluwani Park Inn, with the beautiful Kluwani range for a front yard, now boasts 18 hotel rooms, two suites facing the park, cocktail lounge, games room, and dance floor. The grand opening is this Sunday, June 27th. Neil and Sally Olson are looking forward to seeing all of their old friends. The Canucks will be providing the music. By the way, Cal Miller and Bob Swanson will be there for the opening, but don't let that stop you.
Some other things we wanted to talk about just briefly here. The Haines Road paving. I hear all kinds of comments from people who live here, some who want to see everything paved, and there's others who live here who don't want to see any more paved because they're afraid of us becoming like Banff. You know,
they'd like to put a fence at the border. I know
Yeah.
The people who lived here in 41 when the building of the Alaska Highway happened had similar views that the way of life was very pleasant and why disturb it? And I think many feel that way today. The way of life is very nice and why disturb it with a ribbon of pavement down the highway and bring hundreds of thousands of tourists and so on? Well, they're valid arguments, I suppose. I'm pro-paving myself. As I am on pro-development.
I am just from driving it, I'm pro-paving.
Exactly. The freedom of driving on a highway, freedom of dust and so on, just a great thing. But the Haines Highway paving is a is a real issue. As you know, the American government are going to pay 100% of the cost with very few restrictions. The Canadian contractors will survey and build it, mm-hmm. Or it'll be open for public tender of all contractors. And it'll have a major impact for about a seven-year period on the economy. And I mentioned before, the next 2-3 years look questionable with mine closure and nothing new on the horizon. I think the only bright spot that can tide us over the area during which I hope we are getting rails built, rail extension built.
And that'll take time. Built,
which will take time because we're behind at this stage, we're behind. We're about 3 years behind, in my view, on this type of thing. But during this interim period, the paving program, which is well over $100 million, I think closer to $160 million, mm-hmm. This will employ many people. On a seven-year program, they must build and pave 45 miles a year for 7 years. That can tide us over a difficult period, I hope. So that's one of the bright things in the future. And, of course, any one of the mines, if mm-hmm. they should announce going, that is the other bright thing. But as we sit today, we can express concern because of the unknown, because mm-hmm. there's nothing positive at this moment on various programs and projects. But that paving will have a marvelous effect, and it won't be long. Within that seven-year period, I'm sure we'll have a stretch of pavement from here to our national park. It's mm-hmm. logical. You go to Alaska, McKinley Park. Tens of thousands of Japanese tourists every year go to McKinley Park. We can bring them into our airport and bus them up to our park. It's far more beautiful mm-hmm. than McKinley. McKinley hasn't anything to offer compared to Kewaunee Park, in my view. Mm-hmm. You know, I've seen pictures of Kewaunee. I've been in McKinley.
Well, they've just refurbished and added on to Lodge up there, so I guess there's a bright outlook.
Big attraction in Alaska, no question.
People are expecting this. What about pipeline? What's your opinion on it? We're getting everybody's opinion on this.
Everything we can do to bring that pipeline down the Alaska Highway, we, from a Yukon standpoint, should do. It's going to provide a permanent tax base to the Yukon. Substantial taxes each year on that pipeline will flow to the territorial coffers. It's going to be possible to negotiate a fuel arrangement. There's precedent that American fuel can be dropped off at Canada and then Canadian fuel is picked up somewhere else to go to the U.S., an exchange type of thing. There's precedent for this, and presumably we could negotiate it. And again, we have to get into what price.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't known. It's too soon to tell. But it will employ another, it will become part of that economic base, the broadening of the economic base, because it will employ upwards to 175 people on a year-round basis from 1202 to Watson Lake. During the construction phase, I don't agree with the great alarm that we are going to disrupt our whole community by having workers. There'll be roughly 1,500 people for a period of 2 to 3 years stretched over the 600 miles. I see no reason why with proper organizing of this and learning from Alaska mistakes, which, you know, someone got on and said, gee, we're going to have gambling, we're going to have prostitutes, and we're going to have drinking and all mm-hmm. the rest of it, because that's what's happened in Fairbanks. Different laws, different enforcement, whole a different approach to things. We don't have to...
We don't have to worry about our police resigning to go out and work on the pipeline.
Oh, of course.
If they do, we can bring in others.
You know, and it's environmentally, any damage that has been done to the environment has already been done for 30 years by the highway itself. We're not going to disturb game migration. The right-of-way exists. It's going to be a buried line. You'll hardly see it. And look at all across Canada. You're flying across and driving across the country. There are pipelines running all over. You don't even know they're there. They're
mm-hmm.
buried.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just haven't any concern at all about the pipeline. I think it's the greatest thing that could happen to the Yukon is to have that and to have it happen soon. Unfortunately, it's not even an officially considered route at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
In the first stage, and the reason Premier Bennett was here is to muster support from Alaska and the Yukon for this route, to be heard before the regulatory bodies. Mm-hmm. That decision is yet to come, whether they'll be heard. They're confident they will be heard. Then the concerns, and I know the pipeline group has at this point employed people in the Yukon to start in the second phase to determine the environmental and the social concerns and all of this. But there is no reason at all to be concerned about it, except the input from Yukoners should be there, so it's built in a manner that we don't have disruption, because if just a carte blanche was given and say, go ahead, yes, then you might have
Then we
problems.
Might have a problem. We're going to wrap this up. Do you think it would be a good idea now? People can often write to the government, to their MP, about, say, a lot of social issues and so on, but if people are pro-development, they'd like to see things happening, do you think it would be a good idea for them to write perhaps to Eric Nielsen or to Judd Buchanan and say, look at why, in terms of railway extension, isn't something being done? Let's get moving on this.
Certainly, I think all that type of communication is very, very good. And I personally look on government spending on the infrastructure referred to of rail extension and hydro as a very sound investment for the federal government. When they built the great, what did they call that, the Pine Point Railroad, a great northern railroad or whatever name, but the Pine Point Railroad, it was built on the basis of returning the investment to the government in 20 years. And it wasn't built for Pine Point as such. It was built as a development railroad. The then commissioner of the Northwest Territories, R.G. Robertson, said that we're just fortunate there happens to be a mine at the end of that railroad, but it should be built at any rate just to open up that part of the country. And I think in part we can look on that as we extend the railroad into Ross River as an opening up of the country somewhat. But the investment of government was returned in about 5 years, not 20 years. And I would say, I would speculate only because I don't know for certain, but I would speculate that the federal government's investment in the Anvil project, the building of the bridge and the improving the highway and so on, that they probably have received back more money than they ever invested just from that project. And I stand to be corrected because I haven't got factual figures, but I do know that out of the Yukon, some $80 million flows in corporate and personal taxes. And if the government spends money to build the basic transportation networks in the Yukon, they will get back into the national economy, and the Yukon will get back into its economy substantially greater returns than any money they spent on the investment.
Sounds good to me. Thank you very much for coming on. My guest has been Mr. Rolf Hogan, White Horse businessman, and I think the future looks bright. We'll stay optimistic.
No question about that.
Looks good. Okay, Flo Wyhard's going to be here Monday on Talkback at 11:05, so join us then. Until then, I'm Reed Fowler. Have a good weekend.